America's Ace of the Airwaves.
The X-4 calling control tower. The X-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower, back to CX-4. Wind southeast, ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Pop Harrigan coming in.
Yes, it's America's Ace of the Airwaves. Coming in for another transcribed episode of The Adventures of Pop Harrigan.
Jet and more jet. Yes, that's the plan of the Army Air Forces. Almost every new plane we hear about these jet days is jet-propelled. Recently on Hop Harrigan, we told you about many of these new ships. Now we're going to tell you about another one, a bomber, one of the latest models of the Air Forces. This is the Martin-built XB-48, and it's the largest multi-jet bomber of regular design. It's also the first bomber with 6 jet engines, a very powerful ship with high speed. Many of the performance details are still secret, and tests are being made to find out just what it can do under all conditions. To give you an idea of how powerful this aircraft is, here are some of the details on the engines. Now, as I told you before, it has 6, made by General Electric. They are housed 3 in each wing. The maximum power of these engines is greater than that of 2 giant electric railroad engines, each pulling a string of 25 freight cars. Well, that's some power, isn't it, gang? The ship itself is trim, and it's really good-looking. It's over 85 feet long and stands 27 and a half feet above the ground. As in all jet planes, the wings are very thin, and from tip to tip, 108 feet long. The Martin Company built the XB-48 in the shortest time possible, taking only 14 months to finish it. Most planes have been worked on for more than 2 years before they're ready to fly. Boys and girls, in just a few minutes, I'll be back to tell you more about the Martin XB-48, the largest all-jet airplane, so don't forget to listen. And now to our story. Fearful of another mysterious attack by ghostly wartime enemy fighter planes, the flight crews of the 8th Flying Service refused to make a scheduled night cargo run, so Hop and Tank volunteered to take over. With Paul Conroy, one-third owner of the airline, the boys took off from New Orleans in a heavily laden DC-3 heading for Richmond, Virginia, hoping to see these enemy fighters for themselves. But they ran headlong into trouble from another source, weather, and were forced to fly through a violent storm over the Blue Ridge Mountains, at the height of which the cargo suddenly broke loose, threatening to pound the ship to bits. Only Tank's tremendous strength saved them from destruction. Then, finally, when the weather eased off and the boys could relax once again, Tank made a startling discovery, a discovery which he carried forward to the flight compartment. Show up.
Look at this. Plus, it's trapped. It's one of the lanterns that held the crazy plate there. Look at it.
Oh, that the one that snapped?
It snapped, all right. Do you see why?
Well, it's been cut.
But it was still strong enough to hold the cargo. That is, until weather set in, and the going got rough.
It's cut fairly clean.
Must have been done just before we took off.
Yeah,
by one of the guys in your own airline, too, Paul.
Who could it possibly be?
Yeah, me. One of the Greek monkeys, maybe. Or that guy Martin, the one who got sore and quit. Hey, that's impossible.
Well, it's essential it wasn't no ghost. Which brings up another point. Is this sabotage tied in with those enemy fighters in any way?
I don't see how. You haven't seen any on this trip.
Just a thought. Well, you better strap in now. We're in the Richmond control zone. I'll call the tower and check in. Richmond Tower from 8th Flight 19.
As Pop makes his routine call to control tower in preparation for a landing, Tank and Paul Conroy fasten their seatbelts. Tank first tucking the cut straps safely away in his pocket. 5 minutes later, they're safely on the ground, and after unloading the cargo, Hop and Tank go to the small airport diner, where they wait for Paul to conclude the necessary clearance formalities.
Tank, what do you think?
You want a straight answer?
Of course I do.
I think we got ourselves into a dirty little mess. Unless when we watch our step, we'll be shipped home in a couple of boxes.
Well, then you're sure the strap was cut to make us crack up?
Well, how else can you figure it?
Well, we didn't take over until the very last minute. Martin was supposed to have made the flight originally.
Well, there was still enough time for somebody to go into the cabin and cut the strap.
I suppose so.
Hey, Joe.
Yep?
Give me a repeat on the milk and pie.
Coming up.
But look at it this way, Tank. There'd be no reason to kill us. Nobody knew why we came to New Orleans.
Bert Craig knows what the score is.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Tank.
And that guy Martin knows something's up. We wouldn't have taken the ship out.
Well, you could say that about any one of the pilots.
One apple pie and one milk.
Thanks.
Anything to you, Chief?
No, no thanks. Look, Paul Conroy was with us.
Maybe somebody's after him.
Yeah, but he wasn't supposed to go. He only came because we didn't know the routine.
We seem to be traveling in circles, don't we?
Well, I got the strap safe in my pocket. If I ever find out who did it, I'll shove it right down his throat.
Shove what down whose throat?
Huh? Oh, hello, Paul.
Oh, come on, sit down.
Thanks. What was Tank saying?
Yeah, nothing important. How about something to eat?
No, thanks. I just spoke to Bert. Told him about it.
What did he say?
He didn't believe it at first. But he's going to investigate. He's going to find out who loaded the cargo and if anybody went aboard who didn't belong on the ship.
Well, if you ask me, he won't get far. Half dozen guys could have gone inside her without nobody asking questions.
Well, that's about all he can do. But he thinks he can talk to Cruz into coming back to work because we didn't see any zeros or messes.
Now, that's something. Well, what do we do now? Pick up another load?
No. Now we go back empty.
When do we leave?
Anytime you say. We can stay overnight and get some sleep if you like.
Yeah, there's no point in that.
Well, the ship's gassed up and ready. Just say the word.
Finish up, Tank, and let's get rolling.
Okay. Just let me finish my pie. Keep your shirt on. I'm right with you.
Flight 19. Tri City range from ACE Flight 19. Altitude 6,000 feet. Airspeed indicated 180. Holding course 205. Destination New Orleans. Over.
ACE 19. Tri City range. You are clear. Hold course at altitude. Over.
Any weather? Over.
Scattered clouds.
No
turbulence.
Over. Okay, thanks. ACE 19 out.
I'll take over anytime you want me to.
Oh, thanks, Paul, but I'm not tired. Why don't you go back and talk off for a while? Although, thanks, snoring bother you.
No, I couldn't sleep.
Are you worried?
What do you think? This is the first time in months a ship of ours has come home empty. We've always managed to pick up a cargo.
Well, that's bound to happen sometime. Can't be helped.
Yes, it can, Hop. There's a leak. The dispatcher at Richmond asked me if we'd seen any more enemy planes.
Oh?
That's why there wasn't any return cargo. The shippers know there's trouble. They're not taking any chances.
I get it. Bad news travels fast.
Not without help, it doesn't.
First enemy planes and sabotage, and now somebody's talking too much. Well, it looks like we've got our work cut out for us.
Turning back to the controls, Hop opens the throttle another notch, sending the DC-3 roaring ahead through the night sky. A little after 6 in the morning, they sight the narrow, winding channel of the Mississippi, and, following it straight into New Orleans, are on the ground 15 minutes later, taxiing toward the hangar on which is the sign, ACE Flying Service.
Spot the crew chief for me, Tank. Give me a signal.
He's waving it straight in.
We're okay.
This works. Anybody on the shore?
That's the crew chief at early hours. Running himself ragged the past couple days. Behind, he's off on the left.
That's Roger.
We're on. Okay, cut.
Right. All right, fellas, pile up.
Clear for.
Now, wait a minute. Where's Vinny's ship?
You mean the DC-4?
Yes. You see if it's in the hangar?
No, I can't see from here.
We'll find out quick enough. Go ahead.
Right.
Vinny was flying a load out to El Paso, wasn't he?
Yes.
Bert's coming out to meet us. He'll give you the lowdown.
Go on, thanks. Jump.
Hello, Paul.
Bert, hasn't Vinny come in yet?
No.
He was due at 6. 5:30.
Well, what's holding him up? Hasn't he checked in?
He checked in 45 minutes ago.
And?
He said a Jap Mitsubishi fighter was attacking him. We haven't heard anything since.
Craig's voice is flat and toneless. There's no trace of emotion on his features as he breaks the shocking news. So, the mysterious enemy strikes again. We'll know more about it in a moment, gang, so stand by. At the beginning of Hop Harrigan, we went over some of the details of the Army's new jet bomber, the Martin XB-48. Now, let's learn some more about this new ship. Because of the thin wings necessary for high speeds, the XB-48 is pioneering a new, specially designed bicycle-type landing gear. It was built specifically for planes flying close to the speed of sound. There's no room in the thin supersonic wings to house the large wheels needed for safe landings and takeoffs. So in the new system, the two main wheels are placed bicycle-style in the center of the ship. When not in use, they retract upward into the fuselage. A smaller wheel is located near the tip of each wing to keep it balanced during taxi operations. and these retract into shallow openings in the wings. The Martin people have been experimenting with this new landing gear for a long time. As a matter of fact, some time ago, they equipped the B-26 Marauder with the main wheels in the fuselage and outrigger-type balancing wheels in the wings. Many landings and takeoffs were made to test the gear, and it was proven very valuable to the stability of high-speed planes. In the test flights of the XB-48, Army officers and company officials are watching the performance of the new landing gear very closely, because one of the major problems in building heavy jet ships has been the location of the wheels. Now, if this tandem-type gear works out as well as expected, the problem will be solved. When the test flights are complete, we'll be able to tell you more. Meanwhile, fellows and girls, if you're thinking of working in the aircraft industry someday, make sure you keep in good trim physically. And don't neglect to train your mind as well. It'll take brains to make the grade in the air age. The future of the air is your future. So always remember, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. Returning to New Orleans in the early morning, Hawk, Tank, and Paul Conroy were met by Bert Craig, a partner in the airline, who informed them...
Willie reported 45 minutes ago. He said a Jap Mitsubishi fighter was attacking him.
We haven't heard anything since.
Now a half hour has passed. A half hour of frantic phone calls and tense, anxious waiting. Hawk, Tank, and two ace flying service partners are in the small operations office.
Craig is seated quietly behind his desk. Paul paces the floor nervously.
And Hawk and Tank stand by the window, hoping and praying for a glimpse of their missing partner in his DC-4.
What could have happened to him?
He didn't
crash, or the wreckage would have been found
by now. The planes don't just vanish into thin air.
Take it easy, Paul.
Running a rat race around the office won't help them.
Hang it, I've got to do something.
Craig, yes?
Did Vinny say why he was flying late? He should have been within 15 minutes of the field, according to his schedule, but he was a good 300 miles away.
He said he'd explain when he got in.
We could only
do something.
How much gas was he carrying?
Enough for an extra hour's flight beyond his destination.
He's got about 15 minutes left.
Yeah, if he's still in the air.
Get that quick, Wolf.
Carry, relax, Paul.
Hey, flying service. He has, when?
Vinny?
Hold it, Paul. Well, where is he?
Okay, thanks. Well, he's coming in. He just reported to the tower. Should be over the field any second.
Hey, look. Is that him? Let me see. There, north of the tower. Hi. Four engine job.
Yes, come on outside.
Right, will you? Harrigan.
Yes?
I didn't give Paul the whole message from the tower.
Well?
Well, there's been an accident. The co-pilot's unconscious and Vinny can't see. He can't possibly land the ship.
For a moment, Hawk is motionless, and then suddenly the full impact of the situation hits him, and he rushes to the door of the office and stares up at the DC-4, slowly circling the field. Hawk and the pilot, blinded, land the ship.
There's spine-tingling action in the next episode of The Riddle of the Ghostly Avengers, so don't miss it, gang. Tune in and try with Hawk, Harrigan, and Harrigan, we'll be seeing you same time, same neutral station. Hawk Harrigan is a transcribed copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.